Welcome to another episode of The Strangest Cars I've Raced from the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Series continues with Owen Trinkler, who found out on his Daytona debut the bizarre 1997 Kyler Kopf IMSA World Sports Car was not going to be his ticket to glory. Named after a German boar, built on top of a failed Chevron WSC, with homemade bodywork that copied the era's dominant Rally and Scott Mark III, this could be the most confused prototype from the late 1990s. Trinkler takes us back to that debut with motocross legend Jeff Ward and Indy Lights veteran Roberto Quintanilla, where, aside from top speed and competitiveness, the 97 Kyler Kopf had all you could desire. You can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, and also on MarshallPruitt.com. All right, off we go with Owen Trinkler, the 1997 Kyler Kopf IMSA WSC. Certainly the strangest car he's ever raced.
Owen Trinkler, you have a fun addition to your racing resume, and it certainly fits the strangest car I've raced theme that we're trying to build here. Tell me about the Kyler Kopf, the Kopf Precision Race Products team that you not only happen to be a part of this program starting at the 1997 Rolex 24 at Daytona, but interesting car, weird car, teamed with Beto Quintanilla of Indy Lights fame back in the day, Jeff Ward of all kinds of fame from back in the day. I love the driver lineup, man, but tell me a little bit about this this weird prototype in an era of Rileys and some other, you know, Ferraris household names. Kyler Kopf sure as hell wasn't one of them.
No, Marshall, and thanks for having me on this segment. Yes, and this goes way back. When you messaged me about this, this is like, oh, man, I had to start kind of remembering when I drove this. And it was in 1997 is when this team kind of came on the scene. And we did the Daytona test, and then we did, obviously, the Rolex 24 with those guys, Dave Kopf and the Kyler there, and it was named that because it was after a wild boar. His wife had some paintings and sculptures of wild boars, and so this car really started life as a Chevron, and that came to light to me after I drove the car, you know, several years later. That's where the car kind of started life. I didn't even know that. I was pretty young. I was 19 or 20 years old at the time, and to the funny story, I mean, I guess just as a young driver, I was coming off a good season in 96 and part of the Team Green Academy at that time with Barry Green's team and the Cool Cigarette program, and used that, you know, to sort of a stepping stone into this program, I guess you can say, because I was sort of an unknown product in the IMSA series, and it got Dave's ear a little bit, and kept kind of working him over the winter, and I knew it was a new program, so trying to get in with the established team was going to be really tough with the Rileys and some of the Oldsmobile Spices teams that were out there, but the Rileys were really the car of that era back then with the Ford motor and the Oldsmobile motor. But Dave gave me an opportunity, and we got rolling with this new project, and then you know, we got Jeff Ward involved, and it was an interesting project. I know during the race we actually didn't run the motor to full song, which was a little strange because it lasted, but we weren't fast enough down the straightaway to actually pass some of the GT cars.
Whoa.
So that probably got to be annoying to some of the GT cars that
go around.
Go around, and like, I'm trying as hard as I can, because they pulled the motor back quite a bit on the RPM limit. But the car did finish the race at Daytona. I remember we had an issue. I can't remember, Marshall, if it had a Hewlin gearbox in it or not, but I know we had an issue with the gearbox where if you were going down through the gears to downshift, the car would not stay in gear. It would try to pop out of gear, and so you actually had to go push it to neutral. Then once you wanted to go back to throttle, you know, give a little bit of gas and let it slide back into gear, and then it was fine when it was under load. But if it was off load for some reason, the gearbox that wasn't happy and would try to pop out of gear. So I know we dealt with that for a long period of time through the second half of the race, but the car did end up finishing that race. I think we had a suspension failure. It actually was with me in the car. I don't know if one of the bolts in one of the A-arms in the rear. I know it was in the rear on the left side.
So tell us about that adventure, because suspension failures and prototypes rarely end in a happy way.
Well, thank goodness this one actually ended in a decent way, is that coming through banking NASCAR 3 and 4, when it broke, it was on the left rear. I think it was one of the bolts that kind of goes down through the lower control arm, snapped off or did something. I was in the car, and all of a sudden it's like it goes from being fine to like a tricycle at that point. And that didn't hit the wall, got it back to pit lane. And to be honest, I didn't get out of the car. I stayed in the car. They fixed the car, and I went back out. So I don't know exactly, you know, what the diagnosis was, but as a driver,
holy
maybe
crap.
I was just so young that I was like, okay, whatever, you know, fix it and go back out. What I know now, I don't know if I'd have done that or not, but it did have some issues in the rear, because I know I went with the team to do the 12 hours of Sebring, and we had issues with the rear of the car, braking, suspension, and I guess at that point, I did not run Sebring with them because of those issues that they were having in the rear, that the car was breaking some stuff in the control arms in the rear of the car.
So you're racing a prototype that is a previous prototype named after a boar. And if you look at the bodywork on the thing, well, granted, if you were to look at the chevron, it's a very unique thing. I don't know if it was the most aerodynamically excellent car I've ever seen, but very unique. You could spot that car easily in the field. Interesting to see that in the hands of Dave Kopf and his team, it looked like somebody said, make us our own Riley Mark III.
And chassis.
And slap it onto a chevron. So visually, you would kind of have to know what you're... I mean, granted, if you know the cars intimately, then you obviously would know it's not a Riley. But from 20 feet, you might mistake it for one from a few angles. What was it like to drive otherwise, knowing that, you know, maybe it was with the motor tuned down, you had not a whole lot of top speed to work with. But, I mean, handling-wise, performance-wise... In the areas where you could feel it, did the thing have any balance? What did it do right, or was it a car that did a lot wrong?
Marshall, it was pretty good. I mean, for the most part in the infield, because we didn't have the power on the straightaway, and in the infield, the car wasn't bad. I know through that weekend, we had some ride height issues, and this is back when you had, I think, a couple of qualifying sessions. I don't think we have it kind of like it used to be. This was back when it was on live on ESPN2, the qualifying was, and I think maybe I'd driven it in the first qualifying session, then the second session, maybe Jeff Ward did, and I think we were having some ride height issues and some brake bias problems, because I know he spun in that session, I think, and just trying to get a handle on the car. The team was fairly new, and then obviously kind of taking the chevron and making it sort of their own, massaging it the way they wanted it to look, and yeah, the bodywork did resemble the Mark III, the Riley, and I just don't know if the Dave had enough financial backing behind the project to get it where it needed to be against the Riley and Scott. At the time, the Riley and Scott was just unbeatable. I mean, the thing was just lightning fast with Dyson, and you had Wayne Taylor with his car and the Oldsmobile Power car. I mean, those cars were just, you couldn't beat them. So the balance of the car was pretty good, but I know it just had some teething issues that just never really got us to the front of the field where we needed to be. And one thing was the power issue, because you've been around racing for long enough and working on cars. When you change the power, that's going to change the handling of the car also.
Yeah.
And so having the power sort of detuned, and I know we had an in-car camera that year, because I had a buddy of mine that was watching the race, and I don't know if I was in it or one of the other guys, and he's like, did you guys have a problem with the engine or something? Because he's like, that's when the Ferrari was running also, the 333 SP. That thing went by us like we were standing still. I was like, no, like we just we had it detuned to like 6,500 is all they would top it out at or something. So that hurt us in the main thing, and I think they realized that. I think they ran a little bit 98 in that season again, and they turned the engine up, because I think they found that just trying to run a detuned product against the competition during those days is wasn't going to work.
So when you look at all the cars you have raced over the years, is this a party favorite of yours, talking about the time I raced the Kyler Kopf? Where does this fit in among all the things that you've strapped into, either in terms of oddities or just fun, like, holy crap, I can't believe I actually decided to do that, you know, my own free will and volition?
You know, I think it's got a special place in my driving history. Now, was it the best car and everything that, you know, we were learning as we went along, but it was sort of my first kind of big break, I guess, into IMSA. And at the time, Marshall, I was either 19 or 20 years old when we drove that car. And I think that that record's also been broken with younger kids coming up. But I think at the time that I was the youngest driver that ever driven in the Rolex 24 when I drove this car. And I think Dave was listed on the driver lineup. I don't know if he ever drove a stint. I can't remember if he did during our run, but he was the oldest driver in the field, and then we had the youngest driver in the field. So we kind of covered both bases. And so that aspect was special, and that he gave me that opportunity to be a part of his team for that race and sort of break my way into IMSA, and then I've been able to stay there ever since then.
Now we need to find out where the thing is. Hopefully it's not upside down in a dive bar somewhere, you know, in the Florida Keys or something like that. We need to wheel that out for a vintage event and see if you can go do a few laps without the without ride height issues, brake bias issues, or rear suspension failing on you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where, because they were based in the West Coast, and I'm not sure. They ran a little bit, I know, in the 98 season, but then I think they kind of faded away after that. And I don't know really where the car ended up, and I don't think there was another product. I mean, Dave had the vision of trying to build this into a product and selling to customers. I just don't think he had the backing behind him to get where he needed to be. And the competition during those days was just the Riley and Scott was, and the Ferrari were just the cars to have during that era. So that was a tough mountain to climb that he was trying to accomplish there, but he had the right goals and we were trying to go that direction, just never really got off the ground.
And that was Owen Trinkler on the 1997 Kyler Kopf. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor and share that. And if you want to get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast the moment they go live, go ahead and visit our Facebook page, Marshall Pruitt Podcast, and like, join, recruit, pledge, do something. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thanks for listening.